on one of my archive sites on the web. Let me give you my email address for those of you who are not yet on my email list. Some of you may not know that I do a weekly Parshat HaShavua. Baruch Hashem, it goes out to, at this point, over 500 people around the world. Belgium, Hawaii, all kinds of different places. And at the end of that, you'll see a number of different kinds of sources. You'll see where my archive and website and blog is from Parshat HaShavua. You'll see Shiurim that I have as an archive from Rav Soloveitchik. I have 164 of my Rebbe's Shiurim online. No fee. It's something we do. And something I'm very happy. And anyway, at the end of each of the drashot will be all the information you need for reaching me and also for finding this shiur and other shiurim online. Okay, so the very first thing is, it's absolutely wonderful to have all of you here. Thank you so much for coming. Let's talk a little bit about the rationale for the shiur. The rationale really is multifaceted, multi-leveled. One is, I think, independent of male-female kinds of issues. And you'll understand where I'm going with that in a minute. I firmly believe, in the depth of my heart, that there is a disjunction that many of us feel. There's a split that many of us feel between what you might call, quote-unquote, organized Judaism and our needs for spirituality. I think a lot of us feel that way. I think, in particular, as women, you are probably even more sensitive to that than most men are. And let me give you a story that's really representative of why really everybody needs this shiur, but I believe you're the perfect people to do it with. I won't tell you the name of the yeshiva because it's a bad story. Not that there's bad language, but it's a bad story. I walked in to Ma'ariv in a particular yeshiva in New York, and I finished the first minyan, and I stayed for a few minutes learning for the second minyan. What did I see? I saw a young man dressed totally appropriately, white shirt, black pants, black hat, the whole nine yards, and he starts the Daven the Shemona Esrei of Ma'ariv. He's standing next to a bulletin board. During his Shemona Esrei, he's saying every word, he's looking at the want ads simultaneously, okay, that's on the bulletin board. So, question, did he see every word? Yes, he said every word. Did he think for a moment about any of the words that he was saying? Very doubtful. Unless you're Mozart or Einstein, where you really can do two things simultaneously, okay, especially as a guy, women can. Okay, they do have a neurological connection. Women have a neurological connection that men do not have. And you guys really can do two things at once. But two high-level cognitive things simultaneously, such as tefillah and reading the bulletin board, I don't think so. Not even women. Okay, so that's number one. That, I think, really illustrates. Number two, and I shared this idea with Arlene already, I believe that women, certainly at least in our shul and perhaps in the community, have not been given necessarily the appropriate voice that I think they need. And I think a shiur like this speaks to that. And so, for those reasons, spirituality in general, and trying to give women a voice to participate, that's why I decided on this shiur. Now, talking about participation. In the best of all worlds, I don't like to be the sage on the stage. I like to be the guide on the side. If I do that, however, then there won't be that much content that we're going to cover. We all understand that. At the same time, I don't want to just lecture. So I really want you not to feel held back in any way. And if you have a question, if you have something that's you wanted me to take further, or anything along those lines, please don't hesitate. Please, let's, you know, ask your question. There is no such thing. I'm really one of those old-style teachers that believes there's no such thing as a stupid question. Okay? Except for one question. The one you were too afraid to ask. That one was stupid. Other question, it's perfectly fine. All right. A little bit of background. I'm a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And most of what I do will be very strongly influenced by him. And you'll see that very clearly this evening. In addition, I guess the other major intellectual source for me is the Rambam, and you'll see that as well. Many of my shiurim will be Rav Soloveitchik and the Rambam, and hopefully in a very accessible way. Now, I won't bring these every week, but I did bring three svarim. First, in English. This is called Worship of the Heart, Essays on Jewish Prayer. And it's written in English. It's a summary of a lot of different shiurim that Rav Soloveitchik did. Remember, while initially some of you may say, great, it's in English. It is the English of a PhD from the University of Berlin from the 1930s. So it's a brilliant English. But it is English. Okay? Next. And I just remembered I didn't give you my email address, so I'll give that in a second. Next. This is Ivrit Kala. Happens to be done by one of my teachers, Rabbi Reuven Gradner, who is a big Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik. And it is extremely accessible, okay, in terms of the Ivrit. Very, very, very beautiful. It's called Al HaTefila. It's available, as is the first, at any good Judaica store. And you can probably certainly get the first, Worship of the Heart, online, Amazon, for example. And this you can get at a Judaica shop, any one of them. This is the most, I suppose, difficult of them, although it's very good. It's not that the Ivrit is particularly hard, but this is called Shirei HaRav Al Inyanei Tefillah U'Kriyat Shema. But it's actual shiurim that were then written up by this case, Rabbi Menachem Ganat. Okay, so those are three very important sources. Many other sources as well, but these are fairly accessible in terms of purchasing. Okay, before I forget, my email address is rdbe718@gmail.com. Okay, rdbe718@gmail.com. Happens to be my initials. I used to live in Brooklyn, so it became RDBE718 at Gmail. Okay, so what are we going to be doing tonight? We're going to be looking at tefillah in terms of its definition, in terms of its essence, in terms of its nature, and a little bit of a history. By the way, all of my notes are purposely written in Hebrew, so that I don't read them. And I just use them as a guide, so hopefully it keeps things a little bit exciting for everybody. Okay, so since I'm not lecturing out, it opens up hopefully some doors for all of us. Okay? And in particular, we're going to be talking tonight about informal prayer, which is why I brought Sefer Shmuel and Sefer Shmuel Aleph, and all of you already know, who's that going to be about? Chana. Okay? I think it's very apropos in a woman's shiur to talk about Chana. With that, let's begin. Now, any suggestions on who the very first person in the Torah, as we would say in the yeshiva world, befeirush, explicitly, okay? Who was the first person in the Torah to pray? Any suggestions? Don't be nervous. I haven't killed anyone this whole year. Okay? So we all know that the Medrash says that Adam HaRishon davened to Hashem. Is there anything about davening in Sefer Bereishit for Adam HaRishon? No. It's Medrash. So the very first person to daven in all of Jewish history, at least in the Chumash, is Avram Avinu. Parshat Vayera. It's in Sefer Bereishit, Pasuk Chaf, Pasuk Yud Zayin. And he davens for Avimelech. Everyone remember that story to a certain extent? Avimelech to Tzara, with fairly reasonable intentions. What had Abraham said? What did he say about Sarah? She's my sister. Okay, so Avimelech said, oh, not a bad idea. She's beautiful. And he took her for a wife. Okay, the only problem was, of course, wasn't Abraham's sister. So you all know what happened. Okay, Avimelech was rendered incapable of doing very much at all. And all of the women in Avimelech's entourage were no longer able to give birth. They, even if they were on the cusp of giving birth, and here the mothers here can understand that, I know much better than I can. Okay, even if they're in the cusp of giving birth, they were unable to. Can you imagine the pain and so forth? That was the punishment that had been given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu against Avimelech for having taken Sarah. So how does Avimelech find anything out? You all remember the story. Hashem comes to him in a dream. And he says to him, listen, do you know what you did? And Avimelech says back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I didn't know. Mitam levavi. Right? Mitam levi. I was innocent. I didn't do anything. That leads ultimately to this pasuk. It's a very interesting pasuk. Also, it's the first instance in the Torah where there's any direct use of the word in some form of lehit palel, to pray. And lehit palel means far more than that. And we're going to talk about that, what it actually means. But for our purposes, let's keep it simple tonight. The pasuk says, "V'yitpaleil Avraham el ha'elokim." Right? Avraham prayed, he davened to Hashem. Okay, and notice, by the way, it's Elokim. Why was it Elokim? Why does the Torah use Elokim? What are we dealing with? The opposite, the good tribe. Elokim is din, is punishment. Okay? Right? And therefore, it's Elokim to whom Avraham needed to address his prayers. Right? Because it wasn't Yud Kei Vav Kei, which represents Rachamim. So he davens to Elokim. V'yirpa Elokim, and it's not by accident that we have two instances of the word almost juxtaposed to each other. And it says, V'yirpa Elokim et Avimelech v'edishto v'amotav v'yeledu. Okay, and everybody was cured, and everybody gave birth. So that's the first instance in the whole Torah of anyone davening, at least explicitly. Yes, there's Midrashim, but I'm just working with the text, okay? Now, I'm going to ask you a simple question. What did Avraham daven? If you think he davened the Shemona Esrei, raise your hand. Good, he didn't. But what did he daven? He davened an informal prayer. In Hebrew, e formalia. Okay, tefila e formalia. An informal prayer. Not only that, we have informal prayer. What do we mean by that? No set text, no set time, no set number. Okay? All the way from the time of Avraham Avinu to Ezra HaSofer. Okay? So throughout the entire period of the first commonwealth. We'll see the Rambam on that momentarily and just sort of setting it up. So there was nothing formal at all. So what did Avraham do? Well, just like he davens for Sodom and Amorah, right? And he says what he says, that whole famous conversation. Maybe there's 50, maybe there's 40, and so on and so forth. Okay? It was dialogue. It was pure, total dialogue. The way you speak to a friend. Because Avraham Avinu was Yadid Nefesh to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Yadid Nefesh to Hashem. Right away, there's something very important here. One of the reasons why all of us, myself included, sometimes feel distant from the prayer experience is that we're missing the dialogue. We're missing the dialogical element. And in a real sense, and again, I believe as women you're probably more in touch with this than I am, or men are in general, there's a lack of spirituality sometimes. Okay? Now, we try to make it up as Ashkenazim with beautiful songs. We sing Avinu Malkeinu, Ki Anu Amecha, right? We all sing that together. And even if we're not necessarily connected to all those words, the song comes to raise us anyway. What I'd like to do over the course of giving this year is get connected to the words also. And we're going to be doing that. Okay? But right now, what I want to stress to you is that informal idea of tefillah was never lost. In fact, as Rav Soloveitchik points out, the slichot, okay, that women are most familiar with when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, right? The slichot, okay, are actually informal tefillah, made somewhat formalized. And you'll understand what I mean by that in just a moment. So here's what we have. The Rambam says, and let me read this for you. Okay, so how can you get the Rambam? Maybe you have the Rambam in your house. Maybe you don't have the Rambam in your house. You ready? Don't take it the wrong way. I am not a Chabadsker. But you can go to Chabad.org and go to the library. Okay, that's the drill down. Chabad.org, library, go to Judaic texts. You have the Rambam available in Hebrew and in English. Okay, it's a tremendous service the Chabad did for the entire Jewish world. Okay? I'm going to be reading from the beginning of Hilchot Tefillah, and I'm going to be reading from Perek Aleph, the Halacha Bet, a little bit after the Rambam discusses the obligation for women to pray every day. We're going to be discussing that in a different shiur. Right now, I just want to show you the extent of tefillah, e-formalia, informal prayer, how long it was. So the Rambam says this, and I'll translate along the way. If I go too fast, give me a look and let me know. Okay? You can always rely on Arlene to do that as well. So the Rambam says this, El chiyuv mitzvah zu kach hu. Okay, but the obligation of tefillah, again, informal tefillah, sheyehe adam mitchanem or mitpalel b'chol yom, a person, okay, when it came to informal prayer, had an obligation to daven and to supplicate himself or herself b'chol yom, each and every day, umagid shivcho shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to state the praise of Hashem, which of course, what do we do? From last week's Parsha, HaKel, HaGadol, HaGibor, V'Anara. That's right from Parsha Tekev, which we just read. Okay, so you say the Shevach of Hashem. And what happens if you don't know the words? HaKel, HaGadol, HaGibor, V'Anara. No problem. And you don't know Hebrew. No problem. You're pouring out your heart. The dialogue, the connection between you and Hashem. That's what we're trying to bring back. Okay? V'achakach shoel tzarchav. And afterwards, you ask regarding your needs. And boy, don't we all have needs. Everyone has a pechel. Everyone has, as I sort of translate that, a bag of tricks. Okay? There isn't a family that anybody knows, okay, that doesn't have their own issues and concerns. That's the way life is. That's reality. It's a famous story where a gadol was once given a bracha by one of his balabatim. He said, Rebbe, I hope you know no pain and you only know simchas. So he said back to his Talmud, he says, you want me to die? He said, that's not what life is. Life has tsuras, has problems. So at any rate, you ask for your needs. By the way, hint of things to come. Rav Soloveitchik says that tefillah is most essentially the expression of human needs. And we're going to see that in a moment. So the next time you're davening, and perhaps you're doing it, maybe you're adding stuff informally and stuff, you say to yourself, oh, maybe a Kaddish Baruch Hu really doesn't want to hear my tzaras. Okay, wrong. That's exactly what he wants to hear. He wants to hear it from your heart. How do you know? Ask David HaMelech. Min ha-meitzar karati ka. Okay? Min ha-mamakim karati l'Hashem. From the depth of my being. What does that mean? I guarantee everyone, you can't read the bulletin board and daven at the same time if you're going to pour out your heart to Hashem. Can't do it. And then he goes on, he says this. Shoel tzarchav shehu tzarich lahem b'vakasha u'betechina. You just lay it all out. V'achar kach noten shevach v'odia, and then once again you express shevach and praise. Okay, aha tova shehishpia lo kol echad lefi kochol. And everybody did this himself. It was totally informal. So we don't want to lose that. We don't want to lose that informality. Okay, that sense of speaking from your heart and speaking from your soul, that's what we want to take back. That's what we want to invest our davening with. Okay? Now, says the Rambam, am I going too fast or is this okay? Right? There haven't been a lot of questions, so I want to make sure it's okay. Okay. Imaya ragil, if he was used to doing this, or she was used to doing this, marbe, okay, you can say a lot, but techina b'vakasha. Say a lot of supplication, a lot of requests. V'imaya arel sifatayin, but if the person was unable to speak in a fluid way, by the way, who's arel sifatayim number one? Moshe Rabbeinu. That's how he describes himself. Hashem, listen, send somebody else. I'm really the wrong guy for the job. I know what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu respond back to him? Who gives the ability to speak? Me, you're going to be just fine. So this is an important lesson too. It's a Musa HaSkil. For every single person here, when you want to pour out your heart to Hashem, don't sit there and say, I don't know, I don't think I can. Just do it. And sometimes, as we'll see as well, in a moment we're going to see some sukkim that indicate this, your prayer doesn't even have to be verbal. It can be the famous Jewish krex. For example, at this stage in my life, when I bend down to the lowest cabinet to get out of a pot for my wife, and I try to get up, I go, oi! Okay? Oi! Okay? Is perfectly good. How do you know? How do you know? What's the first word in Megillat Eicha, everybody? Eicha. You could translate Eicha a thousand ways, but a lot of them, Mefarshim, say Eicha is Oi. Okay? Vezamir. Nebuch. Whatever you want to say. That's what it is. So that's davening too. Alright. The Rambam then goes on and he says this. Kefi yechol ato, you daven according to your ability. U'bechol eit sheyirtza. Whatever you want. Do you have to daven Shacharit, Mincha, and Mariv? No. By the way, for those of you who are interested in a very quick psak of the Mishnah Berurah, and by the way, I don't paskin. This is Rabbi Richman Shul. He's the posek. I'm just letting you know. When I mention a halacha, I'm letting you know what is said in a sense of learning. If you have a question of Pesach, please ask Rabbi Richmond. That's very important. Okay? But the Mishnah Berurah says this. Women are obligated in Shacharit and Mincha. And believe it or not, there is a famous posek, the Aruch HaShulchan, who even says women are obligated in Ma'ariv. No one else says it except for the Aruch HaShulchan. Okay, but just so you understand. But at any rate, when it comes to informal prayer, whenever you want. Whenever you want at all. Now, v'chein minyan ha'tefilot. And the number of davening, informally, kol echad kafi yecholato. You only have strength to just say the Shemona Esrei, or whatever you want to say on your own completely. Forget about the Shemona Esrei, so to speak. Don't take it the wrong way. Okay, but on the informal level, anything you want to say, whenever you wanted to say it, however you wanted to say it, was perfectly fine. And therefore, says the Rambam, Yesh mitpalel pamachat biyom. There's those people daven once a day. V'yesh mitpalelim pa'amim harbeh. There were those who daven many times. V'akol yiyu mitpalelim b'koach. Okay, slicha nochach amikdash. So if there wasn't a Beit HaMikdash, there was Shiloh, you daven toward Shiloh. Okay? When the Beit HaMikdash did exist, you daven toward the Beit HaMikdash. Okay? But you said whatever you wanted. V'chein haya, you ready? How long did this last? Ready for this? V'chein haya hadavar tamid mimoshe Rabbeinu v'ad Ezra. But actually, it was longer. We saw it goes all the way back to who? Avram Avinu. So Avram Avinu is approximately 1,500 years before the year zero. And the end of the first commonwealth is in 586. Okay? About 1,000 years later. So what do you have? You have approximately 1,000 years where B'nai Yisrael davened informally in exactly the way we've described. Now, let me give you another example. It's a fascinating example of informal prayer. And this takes place, and here I'm going to be sharing some incredible material from Rav Soloveitchik. Before I do that, though, are there any questions? Is there anything I left unclear? Is there something you want to ask? Yes.
You said that women are obligated to daven shacharis and
mincha. Right, according to the Mishnah Berurah. Okay. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean, for example, in shacharit? And again, it also depends where you are in your stage of life, how much of that you can do. So, for example, if your choice is, let's take mincha because that's the easiest of them. If your choice is Mincha and Ashrei, in the sense of Shemona Esrei and Ashrei, or simply Shemona Esrei, and you're going to be able to do Shemona Esrei, but you can't get in Ashrei, do Shemona Esrei. Okay? If it's the morning, and you're in a situation, for whatever reason, because women are very busy people, okay, as we all know, and you can't say all of Psukei D'Zimra, so then you can say a limited Psukei D'Zimra. Can't say any Psukei D'Zimra, say Shema, Shemona Esrei. That's Bizman HaZeh. You know, Bizman HaHu, in the time of totally informal prayer, it was a different story. Okay? Any other questions? It's a good time to ask. Yes?
Just a quick question. You said the informal prayer is from until...
All the time, to Ezra. Okay. What happens with Ezra? Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. Okay? Do we know the exact year of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah? Absolutely not. Those of you who have studied Jewish history know that until our own time, there's 50 years missing that we cannot account for. Okay? We just don't know. So we say approximately in the 550s, which is, interestingly enough, approximately the time of Megillat Esther. Okay, which is why Chazal tell us Mordechai was one of the last members of the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. Okay, so you have about 1,000 years where informal prayer reigns supreme. Any other questions? Okay? All right. Let's go on then. Let me give you, at this point, two wonderful examples of informal prayer. I'm not sure we're going to necessarily get all the way to Chana, because I'd like to finish about 9:15, so it's not a tircha for anybody. So like 8:20 to 9:15 is what we'll be doing on a regular basis, God willing. But let's go right to Sefer Shmot, okay? An incredible pasuk that Rav Soloveitchik has some beautiful material about, and I want to share all that with you. Here's the pasuk. The pasuk takes place, let me set the stage. This pasuk takes place after Moshe Rabbeinu kills the Mitzri. Y'all remember that? Famous story. Okay, there's a Mitzri who's mistreating a Jew. There's a lot of reasons why. Those of you who know the full story in the Midrash, you'll understand why I'm not going to go through it. Just refer it back to it. I just don't want to embarrass anybody. Okay, but at any rate, Moshe looks ko v'ko, right? He looks both ways. There's nobody looking. And he kills the Mitzri, according to Rashi, with a Shema Mefurash. Says the full 72 letter, which is called Tetragrammaton in Greek, and that is so powerful that it actually kills the Mitzri on the spot. He doesn't say Yudke Vavke, he says the whole thing. Okay. After that, in fact, immediately after that, we have this pasuk. This is Sefer Shmot, Perek Bet, Pasuk Chav Gimel, or 2:23. Here's what the pasuk says: Vayehi be'amim harabim ha'hem ve'yamot melech Mitzrayim. It was after a whole period of time that the king of Egypt died. Va'ye'anchu b'nei Yisrael, and b'nei Yisrael groaned min avodah v'yizaku, and they cried out. V'ta'al shavatam, and their pleas went up El Ha'elokim. Notice again, it's not yet Yudkei Vavkei. The prayers went up to Elokim. Min Ha'avodah, because of their incredible work. Now, what's going on? I already gave you, in a sense, the key to unlock a little bit of this puzzle. When it says Ve'ye'anchu b'nei Yisrael, okay, what was that really, everyone? While we translated it as, and they groaned, what was that? What was it? Informal prayer. They didn't have the words yet. They were pre-verbal. They were completely slaves. In fact, and I'm just giving a little hint of what the Rav is going to share with us, until Moshe killed that Mitzri, they didn't even complain about their lot. They had nothing, so to speak, to say. Killing the Mitzri was that transformative moment for all of Klal Yisrael. Let me share you the Rav's words. This comes from an article in a special edition of Tradition Magazine from 1978. That's when the Rav published this. It actually goes back to a lecture he gave at Hillel at Rutgers University in 1973. Okay? Here's what the Rav said. I'm going to try to read it slowly because I really want it to resonate with you. Not only is it powerful for our purposes, but the parshanut, the explication the Rav is going to give of what this pasuk is amazing. Before Moses came, as page 59 for those of you who ever get it. Before Moses came, there was not even a single sound. We were silent. Okay? Like we all know the joke about preschool teachers, use your voice, right? Use your voice. We had no voice. Think about that. We had no voice. No complaint was lodged, no sigh, no cry uttered, only an agonizing, unhuman shriek would penetrate the weird silence of the night. In other words, somebody be beaten up. As we say in Yeshivish, Ma'aseh b'chol yom, something that took place every single day. The slaves were gloomy, voiceless, and mute. Now ready? Listen to this. The women did not cry when their infants were snatched from their arms. They were silent. The men kept quiet when they were mercilessly tortured by the slave drivers. Torture was taken for granted. Incidentally, this is exactly what happened in the concentration camps. If you read the stories from the time of the Shoah, there, you know, the really basically almost diaries, you see that after a while, people didn't even complain. People lost the ability to express themselves. Their best friend, their father, their Rebbe, whoever it might have been who was standing in front of them, was just shot, okay, in front of them. It wouldn't even register. They lost their voice. Torture was taken for granted. They thought that this was the way it had to be. Now, strangely enough, and I'm Baruch Hashem for you and me, we know what suffering is. What do I mean by that? Listen to this. The pain did not precipitate suffering. Why? They were unaware of any need. The only reason you suffer, I suffer, we suffer, is because our needs are not being fulfilled. All of you have seen, every one of you, and all of you have taken care of babies much more than I have. Okay? But you all know that a baby whose needs are responded to, okay, will use crying as his or her means of communication. Right? And you all know that a baby, a Jewish baby, is a 24/7 boss. Okay? Because while people say a baby can't communicate, a baby has his or her voice, don't they? Okay? But they only continue that behavior, think of reinforcement, right? If they cry and they're responded to. But if you cry, you're not responded to, what happens? You stop crying. Okay? You lose a voice. Klal Yisrael didn't have a voice. Let me continue. When Moses came, I'm reading it verbatim, the sound or the voice came into being. There's a statement from the Zohar that the Rav quotes. By the way, all my years at YU, never heard Zohar mentioned once. Okay? The Rav knew the Zohar. Ki ata Moshe, ata kol. When Moshe came, Klal Yisrael suddenly had a voice. By defending the helpless Jew, Moses restored sensitivity to the dull slaves. Suddenly they realized that all that pain, anguish, humiliation, and cruelty, all the greed and all the intolerance of man vis-a-vis his fellow man, is evil. They didn't realize it before. So now we're moving toward that idea that what is prayer? Recognition of need. Klal Yisrael taught us this. Now here's what he says. The Rav goes on. This realization brought in its wake not only sharp pain, but a sense of suffering as well. Once a person suffers, what do? They cry out. With suffering came loud protest. The cry, the unuttered question. Okay, there isn't a person in this room who hasn't lived long enough to say in their heart, if not verbally, why Hashem? Why is this happening? Every one of us has said it. And don't think it's wrong to say. Min ha-meitzar, karatika, from the depth of my being, I call out to you. The wordless demand for justice and retribution was now begun. In short, the dead silence of non-existence was gone. The voice of human existence was now heard. Klal Yisrael, after 210 years of slavery, became midabrim. As Unkelus says, early on, what does Tselem Elohim mean? It means to be a medaber. It means to speak. Hashem speaks, man speaks. In a sense, because of Moshe Rabbeinu, our humanity as a people was restored. It's unbelievable material. Okay? I never could have said this myself. It's too radical on a certain level. It's too, in a sense, deep. But this is how the Rav said it. Let me just finish with this. Why hadn't they cried before Moses acted? Why was Moshe's action the transformative moment? Why were they silent during the many years of slavery that preceded Moses' appearance? Ready? And again, I can't stress this enough. If you're going to have a big takeaway for tonight, the takeaway is going to be prayer is need awareness. And if you daven and you don't feel you've expressed your needs, have you really davened? It's a very serious question. So, the Rav says this. They lacked the need awareness before Moshe and experienced no need, whether for freedom or dignity or for a painless existence. They did not rebel against reality. They lacked the tension that engenders suffering and distress. The only time you have distress and tension, okay, is when you have a need that's unfulfilled. Okay? So imagine you have, you know, lo aleinu, it shouldn't happen to any of us. Ploni ben Ploni and his wife, they have a talking marriage, a communicating marriage. Certainly, how does the wife know there's an issue? Communication stops. She feels alone. She feels sad. She has a need to communicate. It's not being responded to. Okay? But why does she feel that way? She feels that way because she's aware of the need. She has need awareness. And what does she then try to do? She tries to dialogue with her husband. When you have that need awareness, Hayotzi Mikol Zeh, what do? We dialogue with Hashem. Very powerful, informal idea. Now, let's go on, and with this we'll finish for the night. But before I do, out of fairness to you, are there any questions?
When you say it's a dialogue, you don't get an answer.
Good. That's the fascinating part of tefillah. There's always an answer, even if we don't hear it. There's always an answer, whether it's an informal prayer or it's a formal prayer, whether or not it's the answer we want. Sometimes, poignantly, sadly, it's not the answer that we want, and the answer is a no. But it's still an answer. So sometimes, especially at times of tremendous stress and pain, okay? I use Ploni ben Ploni because I'm looking at people and I don't want to bring anyone, whether or not you believe in an Ayin Hara, the Gemara does, okay? I don't want to bring anyone an Ayin Hara, okay? But Ploni ben Ploni has someone who's direly ill, suffering terribly. And of course, what does a person do? They daven, that person shouldn't suffer, it shouldn't have pain, and then the person gets worse. So what do we feel as human beings? We say to ourselves, oh, my prayer wasn't heard. It's natural. We're just people. What we need to realize is It's all the time heard. And in fact, Arlene and I on Shabbat went over the bracha together of Shema Kolenu. We learned that one of the things we did over Shabbat together. And you see, that what are we asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do? Listen to our prayer. Okay, and how does that bracha end? Baruch Atah Hashem Shumea Tefillah. So whether or not we finite beings can feel that the infinite is responding directly to us, with emunah and bitachon, with faith and trust, we know that it is happening. Even if the empirical conditions that we're presented with don't necessarily seem to represent that. Okay? It's not a sleight of hand, and it's not a reframe. It's a statement of faith. Okay? So I don't want you to think that I'm trying to, like, go over your question. I'm trying to answer your question as much as I can. Yes?
And you were the Rav saying that the person is davening.
Yes.
And at a certain stage of someone's life, things are okay.
Right.
You know, and you're just reading the text. Is that not considered? You always have to have bakasha, personal bakasha in your davening?
No.
Sometimes you don't want to bother Hashem. Things are pretty good. So, you know.
Okay.
If that happens.
So. Let me put a couple different things together from my Rebbe as an answer to you. Okay? The Rav said on a number of occasions, I'm quoting now from a lecture that he gave in Boston in 1972. Okay? And again, that's on my archive. At the end of the Parshat HaShavua, you'll see where that is. It's called The Philosophy and Origin of Prayer. Okay? There's two parts to it. It's unbelievable. It's always best to hear the Rav in his own words. Okay, so the Rav said in that shiur and in other places, a person ought not to get up to daven, to pray, unless he or she feels dependent upon Hashem. So let's look at it this way. Baruch Hashem, things are going great. Things are going fantastic. I won't even start mentioning the great things because, again, I don't want to bring an iron heart. Things are going great. Okay? So I ask you, is your autonomic nervous system working? Are you breathing without having to sit there and go, better breathe now? Are you digesting? Okay? Are all the other processes going on? Is your blood flowing? Okay? Why is that happening? Hashem.
That's a thanks, not a bakasha.
True. But what we want him, we want to say to Hashem is, Halavai Vaither. Hashem, I really like my matzav. Okay? I'd like it to continue. Okay? Would you please do that? Okay? You know, to sort of quote an old song. Every step you take, you know, every breath and all that, right? An old song from my youth, okay? So, everything that we're dependent upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, okay? And also, you know, I always feel that life is tenuous. I was a rabbi of several shuls. I buried a lot of people. And I saw how tenuous life is. And what I learned from that is really that while even when we think everything is great, we don't really realize what we've been saved from. It's sort of like I once saw a cartoon, I shared this with Arlene. I once saw a cartoon, there's a hunter going through the forest. He can't find any animals. Okay? But after every few steps, the animals are behind him giggling. And they're not like little animals, like, you know, these huge bears and stuff like that. So what's the mashal that we can take is from Jews? The mashal is, we don't know what animal is lurking. You know? We get aggravated, oh, I missed that light. Okay? Who knows if we would have made that light? Okay? Remember, we know, you know, go back to 9/11. You all know the story of the Teaneck people. You all heard that story. All the guys from Teaneck were late to get to the World Trade Center. Why? Davening Slichas. They were all late. they all lived. Okay? So you never know. So even when things look fantastic, you never know. Okay. Any other questions? Or let me go to Chana. It's so appropriate to share this with you. I'm not going to go into the whole Gemara, but the Gemara in Brachot says, we learn, who's we? All of Klal Yisrael learn tremendous things from Chana. About what? About tefillah. So really, as a woman, as women, all of you should be very proud. Because here's something that one of our great women of our tradition taught all of Klal Yisrael for all time. Okay, I mean, everybody knows, you know, we were redeemed from Egypt because of the women, and that rolls off of people's tongue. They don't usually think about that, okay, how powerful that is. Here's another case where women changed history forever. One woman, Chana. What happens is, Elkanah, her husband, is rather clueless. I hate to say it, as was Adam HaRishon. Okay, I know, many of you are saying, duh, okay. Because what does Elkanah say to Chana? He said, Chana at this point is what, in the beginning of the Sefer? Childless. What does he say to her? Lama tivki, why are you crying? What are you upset about? V'lama lo tochli, how come you're not eating with everybody? V'lama yera levavich, how come you're so sad? Okay, and here's like, you know, he was a great man, but as women, he says to her, think about this. Halo anachi tov lach me'asara banim, aren't I better for you than 10 children? Okay, now, I'm sensitive to that. Imagine if you're the woman hearing this. Okay, so Chana, by the way, ends being passive and takes her life into her own hands. What does she do? She goes to Shiloh, to the Mishkan. Who's there? Eli. Okay? Eli himself wasn't, by the way, so I. That's a whole different conversation for a different time. We hear the following. V'hi marat nafesh. She was miserable. Okay? Make no doubt about it. She really didn't buy Elkanah's brilliant argument. Okay? Aren't I better than 10 children? Now, ready? V'tit palel al Hashem, which really means El Hashem. She dove into Hashem. Uvacho tivke. She didn't read the bulletin board. And she cried. Mina meitzar. She cried out everything. I'm going to skip in terms of time the neder that she says, but basically she says, I won't say it on the inside, say it on the outside. She says, listen, if you give me a child, a male child, I'm going to dedicate him to Hashem forever. Who is that child, of course? Shmuel. Now, v'hayaki hirbata lihitpaleel. Okay? Here's the word lihitpaleel, a word that we talk about extensively next week. As she continued to daven with all her heart, with Nei Hashem, ve'eli shomer et piha, and Eli watched her mouth. Okay? Now, by the way, what was her mouth doing, everyone? You all know the story. It was moving. Did Eli hear anything? No. Okay, interestingly enough. Now, here is the famous pasuk. Okay, maybe we'll get to the Gemara next week. I just want to leave time at the end for questions. V'chanehi medaberet aliba. What does that mean? Chana spoke from her heart. Now, liba, also in rabbinic terminology, also refers to the mind. So her tefillah, true, was emotional, but she just didn't, in quotation marks, let it all hang out, but she used words. Chana had a voice. Chana had needs. Chana was able to express herself not only with the kreks and with the oi, but with words. So, v'chanehi medaberet aliba, But rak sifateha na'ot, but only her lips moved. V'kola lo yishameya, her voice wasn't heard. And Eli, who is just about as on target as Elkanah, v'yachsheveha Eli lishkora, and Eli thought she was drunk. What does that tell us? What's that tell us a lot about tefillah at this time? It tells us that a lot of people in this informal period of prayer did not sit and daven for an appreciable period of time, and they didn't close their eyes and move their lips and in a way that only they could hear it and no one else could. Basically, what's Chana really giving us the roadmap for? Shemona Esrei. And in fact, Chazal, Anshei Knesset Gadol, and everyone else, look back in time to Chana and say, that's the ultimate prayer. So, who was the Rabbanit of all Klal Yisrael? No one other than Chana. Who, and again, what do we see? She was Marat Nefesh, and she gives it a voice. She was miserable, and gives it a voice. Her prayer came from her heart, okay? And it was in words, because it came Liba, which has the dual meaning of emotionality and the cognitive gesture. Okay? Hayotzi Mikol Zeh, what's the takeaway for everybody for tonight? Hopefully all of you learned different things from tonight's shiur, but at the very least, just to stay focused, what did you know, your daughter, your son, your husband, your friend said, so no, what didn't God talk about? So you, right, which is everyone's going to do, we all do that. So you could say, well, we talked about how prayer is need awareness. We talked about how from the time of Moshe onward, suddenly Klal Yisrael had a voice, and they used their voice. We talked about how Avraham Avinu was the first one to ever daven in recorded Jewish history. And that informal prayer continued all the way until Ezra, which is about 1,000-year period. And we talked about how ultimately prayer must encompass and never lose sight of the idea that prayer is perception of needs. And as we're going to begin to see, God willing, in the ensuing weeks, we're going to see how the Shemona Esrei itself is the doctrine of needs. And the biggest proof, just to whet your appetite, so hopefully most of you will come back, I'd love to see you again, how many of the brachot in the Shemona Esrei deal with bakasha, the expression of needs? At least 13. Out of the 19. It's telling us something right there. And according to Rav Soloveitchik, two of the section is called Hoda'ah, thanks, also contain a significant amount of Bakashot. So it might well be that Sach HaKol, altogether, 15 of the 19 Brachot of the Shemona Esrei deal with Bakashot, which can only be stated if we understand we have legitimate needs that need to be expressed and halavai need to be answered. So are there any final questions? Okay.
Did you just say we were going to discuss women's obligation another time?
Yes, we're going to do that next week.
Because so there are different opinions.
Yes.
How much informal prayer can replace any of those formal prayers?
It's a great question. So by way of whetting your appetite again, okay, you have the Magen Avraham, one of the most famous commentators in the Shulchan Aruch, who says women can fulfill their obligation, and we'll expand on this simply by saying Moda Ani. Okay, whereas I said a moment earlier, okay, says the Mishnah Berurah, no, you got to daven Mincha and Shacharit. So there's lots of positions in between. Again, please ask the Rav for a psak din. I'm sharing with you different views. I want to really thank you from the bottom of my heart for all of you coming. It's wonderful. You help give me a voice to share all of this with you. Thank you very much. Sure. Say one more time. Yes.
And she asked this father.
Yes. Rivka did. Yitzchak did. Right. Yeah. So the bottom line was is that it says v'yetar Yitzchak. Okay, that he did daven for Rivka.
He did.
Yeah. But what you're thinking of is Rachel and Yaakov. Yaakov does not. Okay?
Yitzchak
does.
But she didn't feel she had the right to.
She started, but she wasn't answered. And that's the famous Rashi, where Tzadik ben Tzadik is answered, but not Tzadik ben Rasha to the same extent. It's a great question.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you.